Hacking into computers through phone lines has encouraged the creation of countermeasures, firewalls, passwords, and digital encryption. There is a lesser-known tool in the hacker's repertoire called social engineering. It's simpler and, in effect, has flown under the radar of sophisticated security technologies. From Silicon Valley, Michael Epstein reports.
Kevin Mitnick became known in the early 90s as that brilliant hacker who cracked his way into companies such as Motorola, Novell, and Sun Microsystems. He was accused of electronically stealing millions of dollars of computer information. But Mitnick says his most damaging attacks were done through people rather than machines.
What I've always said, you could have the best firewalls, the best encryption, the best authentication devices, even using biometric authentication devices. All it takes is one person to be duped that has access to information or could weaken the network infrastructure, and all that money is wasted. Security is as strong as the weakest link in the chain. And usually the human element is the one that's overlooked the most.
Manipulating employees to reveal privileged information has come to be known in the high-tech world as social engineering. The term has been around since 1925. And originally referred to any application of the social sciences to industry or society. In the world of information technology, social engineers are people who break their way into vaults of digitized, networked information, the livelihood of many modern corporations. Mitnick explains how he might have socially engineered a fictitious bank for the code of the day, a verbal password needed to obtain customer account information.
You would call a branch and call a department and say, "Hi, I'm with headquarters. Somebody requested a fax on a person's account." You just, you know, give a name, and they requested a fax of information from our branch or from the headquarters or whomever. And usually, 8 out of 10 times, you'll find somebody.
Once Mitnick found the person requesting a fax, he manipulated the situation so that the onus fell on the employee to give him inside information.
You would say, "Okay, I'll call you back." 5 minutes later, you call that person back. And then you simply say, "Well, I have the information for you. What's your fax number?" And they give you the fax number. You say, "Well, before I can send you this information, what's the code for the day?" And they'll give it to you because they have been duped into believing that you're fulfilling their request.
Mitnick also made personal visits to some target companies. If a social engineer can access a company computer, it only takes a couple of minutes to create a remote username and password for themselves or directly download proprietary information onto a disk. Physical security is thus becoming a high priority at many high-tech corporations. At OneSecure, a network security company in the heart of Silicon Valley, security staff are well aware of social engineers.
So the first stop is obviously a locked door, which is open only during business hours and when Maurice is here.
Brett Eldridge, the vice president of security, is working his way through the security barricades a social engineer would encounter at the company. One of the first and most formidable is Maurice, the security guard.
The guys let me know who are coming and what's to be expected. So and if we have anybody out of the ordinary, then we will check you out. And then if no entry, no idea, no entry.
Then the system becomes electronic.
The second stop is before you get into the inside of the building, you need a card control to get in.
And finally, there's the Security Operations Center, where Eldridge puts his finger in a neon green fingerprint scanner.
Given the theoretical, somebody does get into the building and they social engineer their way in, they can't get into the operations center without a fingerprint as well. So, and there's only, the only people who have fingerprints to get in are myself, the manager of the security operations center, and then the people who actually work in it.
Sounds basically impenetrable, but wait a minute. There I stood looking at a large screen projection of files beyond the firewalls of several Fortune 500 companies. While Eldridge kept a watchful eye on me, many high-tech companies don't have such vigilant eyes or aren't sure who to keep an eye on. Expanding companies are hiring lots of new people with unfamiliar faces. Wynn Schwartaw is a corporate security expert in Florida and author of Cybershock, a book on the threat of computer crime.
I have gone into major financial organizations in New York, just walked right in the building, never been stopped by any guards, hopped on the elevator, gone upstairs, walked around, never found a secretary, sat down at a desk and hopped on their intranet.
Social engineers also take advantage of the diminishing degree of personal contact at large companies. Jim Snyder is the vice president of corporate security at Exodus Communications, a global internet service provider which hosts large companies such as Microsoft, eBay, and Yahoo. As his company builds more and more data centers, Snyder sees more and more fertile ground for social engineers.
And it's the same with all businesses. As they expand globally, as they acquire additional companies, increasingly there is going to be more email, less interpersonal action between employees, and that provides an opportunity for social engineers.
Once inside, there are lots of things a social engineer might want to get a hold of.
We have seen incidents in which recruiters have taken on the persona of Exodus human resources personnel and attempted to get salary and stock option information for some of our key employees in an effort to try to recruit them away. There are always those who are going to be seeking to get insider trading information. They want to know what the next big acquisition is, what the next big product is.
A recent Price Waterhouse study puts the cost of cybercrime and industrial espionage in the United States at about $300 million a year. No one knows what part of this figure social engineering accounts for. It isn't formally tracked. Security experts say that the practice is on the rise, yet it's unclear how much of social engineering really costs companies. For instance, Sun Microsystems claimed that Mitnick stole $80 million worth of source code from them, yet subsequently offered the same code for $100. It is yet to be proven that Mitnick made any money off the information he stole. He seems much more driven by Dungeons and Dragons ideals than the profit motive.
I became involved because of my passion for knowledge in the intellectual challenge and kind of the thrill it gave me. What comes to mind immediately is being like Harrison Ford in the Indiana Jones movies. He was always putting himself at risk because he's always in places he shouldn't be. He was an explorer.
Online commerce and banking companies can't afford either white-collar criminals or swashbucklers rooting around in their networks. They're educating employees to be careful, even if it means putting a squeeze on a culture built on bubbling shop talk and cocktail napkin diagrams. Again, Brett Eldridge at OneSecure.
Yeah, I'm a paranoid person by nature, so I question everybody until I get to know them on a personal basis. And then once I get to know them, which might take years, then I'll sort of trust in them.
And it's this suspicious mindset that may be spreading through the very internet companies that strive for a world without barriers. For NPR News, I'm Michael Epstein.